I'm Jay Hughes, producer of Change Surfer Radio, and for the next half hour, I'll be your guide to a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future. Brought to you by the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies. Welcome to Change Surfer Radio. My bachelor's thesis was on Pentecostalism, the practice of speaking in tongues, and I spent 4 months in a Pentecostal church trying to get inside the heads of folks who had very different theological beliefs from my own. And I continue to have, throughout my career, a fascination with religious ethics. I've always been interested in questions theological and philosophical. I've written many things about religious ethics, mostly from a Buddhist point of view, since I also was a Buddhist, former Buddhist monk in the 1980s. And nowadays I teach Sunday school and occasionally adult religious education in the Unitarian Church. And as a consequence of being a non-Christian and a non-theist and a religious liberal, I have often been scared by the rhetoric of the radical religious right and that tends to dominate increasingly politics in the United States. And increasingly, they have begun to focus their attention on the kinds of values that I and techno-progressives and transhumanists advocate around biotechnology as being satanically inspired, which is giving me a good deal of pause about the safety of the coming conflicts. The conflicts we've already had around abortion have been quite violent, and gay rights has occasionally been quite violent. And now the conflicts that we're having around stem cells and the conflicts that we're sure to have in the future around cloning and genetic engineering and human enhancement. I have become quite concerned about this religious secular dimension of it, since only about 5% of the country shares my level of secularism and the majority tend to profess much more belief. Among the attacks on the things that I write and believe, the people who have attacked me directly include folks like Al Mohler, who's the head of the Southern Baptist Seminary, and the Vatican newspaper has critiqued my organization. And now there is also coming out of the extreme Christian right, there are folks who are quite conspiratorial and who are arguing that transhumanists and transgenic researchers are attempting to create angel-human hybrids, which will fulfill a kind of role in the end times. I first heard about this idea of angel-human hybrids from an episode of The X-Files, by the way, where there was, in fact, a Nephilim, an angel-human hybrid. At any rate, I'm going to, over the course of the next couple weeks, interview a couple folks on the farthest edge of Christian belief. I don't see them as representative of Christian critique of biotechnology in any respect, but they are folks who see transhumanism and transgenic research as central to the machinery of evil that is implicit in an end times scenario. And most Christians, although they see many things as being evil, they haven't made the explicit linkages between how exactly biotechnology is a fulfillment of biblical prophecy that these folks that I'll be talking to have. So the first up is a two-part interview with Tom Horn. He's the author of a novel called Ahriman Gate, which is a hybrid of the Left Behind series with Stargate, The X-Files, and a kind of Lovecraftian Cthulhuism in which people like me are trying to breed genetic supermen to literally open the gates of hell. I'm speaking today with Tom Horn. Tom is a lecturer, author, and businessman who served 25 years in Christian ministry, focusing on the topic of UFOs and biblical history. He's appeared on many radio and television programs, including Art Bell's Coast to Coast and Pat Robertson's The 700 Club. He's the publisher of Raiders News Update at RaidersNewsUpdate.com and the author of, with his wife, Nita, The Ahriman Gate, which fictionalizes the role of UFOs and many other evil agents in the end times. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you for inviting me on your program, Dr. Hughes.
Well, I know that you've discussed my work at times on your site, and that was, I think, how I first ran across your work, doing frequent Google searches about topics of interest to me. And so I want to get a little bit of your perspective. Your perspective, I don't think, is very familiar to most of the listeners to my radio program, who tend to be pretty secular folks and not engaged with some of the topics, many of the topics that you are interested in. But there's a couple elements that figure prominently in your worldview. One is that you are part of the school of thought that believes that aliens and UFOs have a substantial reality in human history, and that there's much evidence for their having visited us in the past. Is that correct?
Well, I would say that that's correct, but I would not typify myself as a believer. What I do is say that there seems to be a redundant history, ancient history, that's told in the folklore, the mythos of different cultures, and that history includes essentially a story about the gods who came down and involved themselves in human history, and also in some of those stories in the evolution of the species, and that I see that as potentially being part of what could be occurring in the study of UFO, or in particular in abduction phenomenon, if there really is anything to it, if there's anything more than just mass psychosis among the people who consider themselves to be participants in that belief system, if there's something really there, it could be that it's the same thing that was going on since the dawn of time, and that's been recorded in chiseled rock and written on animal skins about these super intelligences that chose, for their own reasons, which we may not yet know if it's true, to involve themselves with our kind. And so what I would say is I simply look at the history and say there seems to be a great deal of pattern to the story repeated by a large number of people at different points of time and around the world, which was written into their mythologies, which was written into their systems of belief, and that I think at times may even be speaking to a technology that simply was beyond their ability to comprehend. So that's really all I'm saying. I'm not saying that I'm convinced that there's anything to ufology, but I am saying that there does seem to be something which has been occurring with regard to Earth and the species that speaks of a technology, a knowledge, an intelligence that transcends what we, at least what we understand today.
Now, the other part of your worldview, of course, would be that you consider yourself a Christian, and that you're trying to interpret many of these events through a biblical worldview. And I presume that you would think of yourself as pretty much a Christian, a biblical literalist, that you believe that there's some literal truth in the biblical account, but you also take into account these apocryphal texts. So I think that's unusual. Not very many biblical literalists I know of are also into the Apocrypha.
Well, yeah, I mean, I am, I guess you would say that I'm a literalist, but I'm also very open to, I guess I try very hard to appreciate other people's points of view. And I try to decide for myself, outside of any indoctrination that I may have acquired in my theological training when I was coming through seminary. Outside of that, you know, I by the way, when I was doing the research for the book, The Ahriman Gate, there must be 2,000 pages there, just from the ethical arguments that were being made on both sides of our post-human future, which I entirely happen to believe in, by the way. Some of the interviews you've heard me on usually will stem from only one side of this debate, but you might be surprised to know that, you know, I've always tried to, even in your case, to speak in respect of the things that you say. I have questions about the philosophy. I have questions about the ethics of our transhuman future, which I happen to believe is going to happen whether people like it or not, and therefore I think the discussion needs to be now from different points of view. People of faith might see post-humanity, they might see transhumanism, transgenics, they might see these emerging sciences, and especially the ones that go beyond, cyborg assistance technology to literally changing and intermingling different various living organisms through transgenics, things like that, breaching species barrier. People of faith, I think, would see that as an affront to God's creative genius. But on the other hand, I also think that there are Darwinists who might look at this as kind of a rape of the natural process of evolution. And then I think there's people who subscribe, for instance, to the chaos theory, who might see some of this technology as Jurassic Park. And so I guess where I come from is it would be better for all of us, to mutually respect each other and to come together and debate these issues and what they mean. And if it is a Pandora's box, to do it before it gets out of the box, to legislate both legally and morally and ethically what the future of the human race is going to be. So maybe I'm just more of a free thinker. I know that I'm on a quest to try to understand a lot of different things, not just what transhumanism might mean, but other issues as well. But mostly what I like to do is talk to great thinkers, including people like yourself, and try to chew on where they're coming from, what their worldview is. Does it make any sense to me, and is it compatible with my upbringing? And I am a Christian. I was raised as a Christian, very conservative, by the way. But if, as you say, you've been to my news service, you know, sometimes people go there, they're confused, because I've been a political conservative as well all of my life, and yet I have enormous problems with the current administration. And so
Let's linger there for just a second, because I am impressed with, I mean, the reasons that you're critical of the Bush administration are probably very different than the ones that I would be, that I would choose. But you are critical, for instance, of the influence of the neoconservatives in the Bush administration and of the traditional, or the hard right Christian doctrine of dominionism. Could you tell us, what's your beef with dominionism? I would think that as a conservative Christian literalist, you would have a dominionist orientation.
Oh, absolutely not. Well, first of all, I think that these need to. You know, I think there was some great wisdom in the founding fathers who came out of a totalitarianistic form of government, who saw the need to separate government from religion. Those are entirely two different things. And if you even just look at the New Testament and you look at the teachings of Christ. For instance, I would not say that Jesus was a pacifist, but he definitely said that his kingdom was not of this world. And when they tried to get him politically involved, he essentially just abandoned all of that. He wouldn't pursue it. He wouldn't let them make him a king or a political figure. He said, "My kingdom is not of this earth." And when he did talk about the leaders of the religious institutions, he called them a bunch of children of the devil, and you know, said they would go about the earth to make one proselyte, make them twice-fold more a child of hell than they were themselves, that they weren't entering into the kingdom of God, and they weren't letting anybody else enter in either. So if you look at, and I realize it's not what we're talking about today, but if you take all of that, And then just look at the pattern of the New Testament church. They didn't involve themselves with politics. If they owed taxes, they'd catch a fish, take a penny out of a fish's mouth, and give it to the tax collector. They just did not involve themselves with trying to create a theocratic form of government by taking over government and the Supreme Courts of their day and legislating morality. If you are a biblical literalist, it seems to me that you would understand that the preaching of the gospel, if anything is going to change the heart, it would only be the preaching of the gospel. Those are things that God does. That's between God and man. People respond to it or they don't respond to it. But to try to legislate morality, I mean, that's an old argument, it's an old statement, but there's a great deal of truth in it. It is impossible. But what happened to me was I was pastoring Family Worship Center years ago. My church was being used by the Trinity Broadcasting Network to do their West Coast broadcasts, and at that time I was hanging out with all of those people. And I started reading a book by Pat Robertson, I think it was called The Kingdom of God. And the more I read it, I thought, you know, if you really followed through with what good old Pat here is promoting, you would actually be creating a system upon which the Antichrist could come to power, because it's a marriage of politics and religion.
That's an interesting point from your point of view, and I've seen this on a couple of the websites that you link to, that there's a parallelism between what the Antichrist would attempt to achieve and what Christ would attempt to achieve in the Second Coming, one of which is to create a kingdom, a world domination kingdom. And so discriminating between what is a Christian kingdom and what is an anti-Christian kingdom is a necessary thing to do there. Just that if someone like George Bush or Pat Robertson or the Pope were to try to establish a world-ranging government, some kind of world imperialism in the name of faith, it wouldn't necessarily, from your end times dispensationalist point of view, wouldn't necessarily be a Christian dominion. It might be, in fact, the Antichrist dominion.
That's right. In fact, I think it's what it is. I mean, if you want to give a literal interpretation to where dominionism will take us, Reconstructionism, where that's going to take us, I see it as a fulfillment of an Antichrist system. If you buy into that, that's where I see it going, because if you look at the apocalypse, if you look at the Revelation, and you look at the system of the Antichrist, you have this political figure in this world global leader, i.e. the Antichrist, but you also have the false prophet, and it's the false prophet who leads the religious world into accepting this political figure as the fulfillment of their messianic dreams and hopes and whatever, and that false system is established on the earth. Whereas if you just simply look at the theology of Christ and of his followers, of his disciples, they never taught any of that. It's not there. I guess I'm a very simplistic person, James, in that when I see some of this stuff that's being taught, I just simply look at the pattern of the New Testament and I say, do I see this happening? Is this something I see Paul teaching? Is this what the church was teaching? If it isn't there, it isn't for me. And I still just subscribe to, I guess, maybe a more old-fashioned Mennonite or whatever, kind of a quieter approach to faith. You don't wear your faith on your sleeve. It's not charismata. You're not flopping and falling around and flipping and doing all of that stuff that brings attention to men. It can be a strong faith in God that unwavers. It's a private situation between you and God, and if anything reaches into the public, it's the preaching of the gospel. Paul even said that, you know, if any man preaches any gospel to you other than you've received of us, let him be anathema maranatha. Let him be cursed when Christ comes. And that's what I see is happening in dominionism. And I realize we're completely off what I thought we were going to be talking about. But and we could have another whole show dedicated just to that. But the point is,
I think on that one we'd agree mostly. So
well, but the point is, I guess I'm more of I like to just think for myself. And by the way, I raised my kids to be that way. And I've often said to my wife, I've said, you know, the greatest gift that we've given to our children is to make them independent thinkers. I don't even care if they agree with me. I want them to think. I want them to use their mind. I want them to draw rational conclusions that make sense to them, something that they believe because they thought it through, not just because I told them it's what they're supposed to believe.
I'm speaking with Tom Horn. He's a lecturer, author, businessman, Christian minister. He runs the ReadersNewsUpdate.com site, and he's the author of Arum and Gate. And we're going to get back to talking about transgenics and its role in his worldview. Okay, so I'm sorry I took you out on that long excursion, although I find it fascinating, the critique of the fusion of religion and politics from someone who I would have otherwise expected to be on the same page. From your worldview, since God created humanity and the animals separately, there is, there is a substance to humanness that is separate from animalness. And this is one of the things I see of a very frequent theme in Christian rejection of transgenic research, is the notion that there's some kind of violation of the divine separation of humans and chimps and other kinds of species, which also extends, in your case, to the divine separation of humans and angels, which we'll get to in a second. But let me just perseverate on this for a second. The notion seems to be that if one is not human, then one is no longer in the category of being capable of salvation, and perhaps is in fact intrinsically evil if one is a product of one of these violated unions. Is that part of your worldview? If I were to mix human and chimp, would that creature necessarily, regardless of any intellectual capacities it have, not be capable of salvation?
You're asking me a question. I'm not avoiding the question, by the way, but you're asking me a question that I can't answer. I would tell you that it would be, at a gut level, it would be my sense that this is something that is not human in the sense that it would participate in salvation. That doesn't mean that it's not a living being, and it might not even mean that it's not a being that God wouldn't care about. But in terms of salvation being eternal, you know, inherit heaven, go there and be there forever, kings and priests with God, I would see something that is outside, that breaches the species barrier, that is something that is outside what God made, as not something that would participate in a redemptive process.
Okay. I went to a related website to yours, and I found this guy, David Flynn. I'm sure you're familiar with his work.
Yeah, I know David.
Yeah, and he says, Jesus Christ is called the Kinsman Redeemer. Jesus didn't come to save the apes and the dolphins. He didn't come to save puppies and kitties, et cetera, et cetera. These hybrids are not capable of being saved by the Kinsman Redeemer. So in this sense, Christ is not a Christ or a savior for potential aliens that we might find. He's only a savior for genetically human beings. Do you buy that?
Well, I buy that. That's all we know in terms of conservative Christianity, and keep in mind that, you know, we hold one book, a Bible, as being sacred above all other books. I happen to believe there are some extra biblical books that tell the same stories, but. So I buy that if you use the Bible alone as your guide, then you're going to reach those conclusions. I understand that in this community of discussion about transhumanism and transgenically altering, especially intelligent living organisms, what those beings might be. And then when you start trying to reach this Christian ethos or this discussion about salvation, I'll tell you, James, it's confusing even inside the church. When I was a pastor for almost 25 years, I had people inside the church that believed that their pets were going to go to heaven with them. And then I had people who believed that that was not true at all. And so inside the conservative church, inside the evangelical church especially, you know, maybe Muslims, Judeo-Christians, or people within that worldview, you know, there is this area about...
Well, I imagine there must be Christians who believe that aliens would also be compassed by divine salvation because they would also be products of divine creation.
Well, I mean, there are people who believe that, and then you have Mike Heiser on the other side, what I call Heiser's Lion. Mike Heiser and I are friends, and, you know, he's always on coast to coast over there with George Norrie challenging Zachariah Sitchin to come on and debate him about the Hebrew. But, you know, he has a theory that aliens might be something entirely outside of the whole redemption process. And the reason I call him Heiser's Lion is because he explained to me one time, he said, you know, these beings may do things that are, and this is the assumption that they're real, but these beings may do things that seem malevolent because they act with disregard to the human condition in abduction. But he said, you know, think of them as a lion. If you run out into a field where there's a big lion, he may eat you, but you would not say about that lion that he's more immoral or immoral. He's amoral. The lion just does what he does. And maybe aliens are a kind of intelligence that we don't know anything about yet. Maybe they're not a three-dimensional reality. Maybe they're a tenth dimensional or fifth dimensional or eighth dimensional or whatever. Maybe they're something that was made by God, but they're not part of the redemption process. They're not fallen man. They're just something entirely different. And if they act with disregard to our condition, it's no more different than a lion that might eat you. You just don't think of it in terms of redemption or morality or sin. Those kind of questions don't come into play because we're talking about an entirely different species where a human is created in the image of God. And the suggestion then, of course, is that they have this judgment between moral right and moral wrong, and if they choose to do moral wrong, then they're impugned with sin.
Okay, the reason I perseverate on this is because from a secular point of view, and I assume from many Christian points of views, other Christian points of view as well, the capacity for moral reflection is something that could be shared whether you had human DNA or not. But, you know, it seems that in your worldview, and again, correct me if I'm wrong, one of the things you're worried about is the return of human-angel hybrids, which you say in biblical literature is called Nephilim, and that these Nephilim will have superhuman powers or have had in the past superhuman powers, and that you worry that transgenic research and super soldier research and different kinds of transhumanist research are leading to the creation of Nephilim, and that these Nephilim, as you propose in the Ehrman Gate, may have some role in end times machinations to bring about a conflict, but an ultimate conflict between good and evil. So is that a correct interpretation of the role of the Nephilim, that they're going to be intrinsically evil and on the side of evil in the end times prophecy?
Well, that's the way I fictionalized it in the book, The Ahriman Gate. You know, Ahriman's the Zoroastrianistic equivalent of Lucifer, and therefore the reason for the name of my book, that something could come through a gateway. Maybe something has come through gateways in the past. When I was doing the research, by the way, I mentioned to you earlier that some of the stuff that you had written was in that 2,000 pages of research. That ought to make you feel proud, huh?
I'm very happy about that.
Because I wanted to try to understand the different ideas, the questions, the ethics, the philosophy, from different points of view. But along the way, as I was collecting all of that information, I started noticing something that to me looked kind of suspicious, and that was these ancient stories of the Nephilim, the Anunnaki, and of the gods who came down and mingled themselves with the human species. But my question about it really had to go to was there something really here? In other words, was this just folklore? Is this just mythology? Is this just something that kind of spread from generation to generation, was passed down from the forefathers to the sons, and somehow the Phoenicians got on their ships and went around the world and brought it? You know what I'm saying? Or was this redundancy something that was being told because nearer to the antediluvian age, there really was some event that occurred in which there were beings that were far in advance of our technology that came and that interacted with the human species, including the fact that they'd done things to change and transgenically alter.
This has been the first part of an interview with Thomas Horn. He's a ufologist and biblical historian. He's the director of RaidersNewsUpdate.com and the author of the novel Ahriman Gate. And we'll be coming back next week to finish our discussion about the role of transgenic research and transhumanism in the end times prophecy as Tom Horn sees it. But if you can't wait until next week, you can hear the rest of this interview at IEET.org. You've been listening to Change Surfer Radio, a sexy high-tech vision of a radically democratic future. Brought to you by the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies and produced at WHUS Stores at the University of Connecticut. I'm Jay Hughes, the host and producer of Change Surfer Radio and executive director of the IEET. If you want to learn more about the techno-progressive perspective of Change Surfer Radio and the IEET, or you want to share your thoughts about our programs, email me at director@IEET.org. You can find the Institute for Ethics and Emerging Technologies at IEET.org. You can subscribe to a weekly podcast of Change Surfer Radio and listen to or download all of our shows since 1998, thanks to the Infos Radio Project at the Change Surfer website at changesurfer.com. So educate, agitate, and organize, and I hope to meet you in a sexy high-tech and yet radically democratic future.